Hello, listeners. This is not an episode. Unfortunately, due to a perfect storm of factors, including the length of the episode, audio issues, and health emergencies, episode 13, To Wish Upon a Falling Star, Stone, part 2 is behind schedule. By a lot. This is not my favorite thing in the world, as we also missed an episode last month, and with Gen Con in August, I'm a little skeptical about releases next month as well. I swear one day I will get ahead in editing. One day, my time will come. So I figured that since everything is behind, I would fit in a small, audio appetizer. I thought it could be fun. I did a little bit of an AMA on the Hedged In Discord, so I figured it would be neat to share those questions and the answers and some points that I could elaborate. So let's get started. Can you name the top three influences on your writing style? First off, just right off the bat, Hayao Miyazaki and Rebecca Sugar, both of which you can really tell in some of the descriptions that I have. Miyazaki's just, it's Miyazaki. Like almost every visual artist has been inspired by Miyazaki, whether it's Kiki, whether it's Spirited Away, whether it's Princess Mononoke, but especially with Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke, you can see those influences on Hedged in some of the ways I'm telling the story. And with Rebecca Sugar, you can see the floating gemstone desert. There's some other characters you all haven't met yet and some ideas about some things, but also just her general storytelling style of everything has a purpose. Everything is sort of a reflection of something else. There's all of these foils and themes that I'm introducing, but there's also the foils and themes that the players introduce. So, which is why APs are probably one of my favorites, is that it's not just me doing these things. I'm also reliant on the other cast members. My third influence is a little bit tricky. For a very long time, I would say J.K. Rowling would have been the third influence, but that's not, strictly speaking, accurate. I think it's the ideas of fandom and fan works and what people added to her world is more of the influence on me. Fan works and fandom, people write and create inside existing universes to fill in these spaces that are missing them. So like, this is where you find a lot of both your self-insert characters and also like the shipping wars, especially in the queer shipping lanes. People are making things to make a narrative that they love fit themselves a bit better. And I think that's beautiful, and I think that's really important. I wanted to take those feelings and do that on purpose. I wanted to go, what are the things that I see in mainstream media that are missing, that people are not seeing, and apply that a bunch. Yes, JK is an influence in that what she lacked and what other people brought is what changed my outlook. However, probably what most people are actually thinking of when it is influences is the sound of Hedged In and how it's played and how it's run. In the running aspect, a lot of the other podcasts that I've listened to are a huge influence on me. Taylor LaBrèche of the Leviathan Files and Game Closet is number one. Recommend it to everybody. As is Aaron Catano Saez of All My Fantasy Children, Jeff Stormer of Party of One, the folks at Chaotic Goodness Podcast, and Diana and Zach, but especially Diana. I love you, Diana, of the Heart Points Pod. Each of those different podcasts have really showed me differences of how to portray character or how to tell the story better without maybe the limitations of what the game is actually doing. So it's less about the roles and more about R-O-L-L-S and more about the roles, R-O-L-E-S, that we play. It would be undeniable that both Griffin of the Adventure Zone and Aram of God's Fall have both been an influence, and both communities of those podcasts are also an influence on how I run things at Hedged. But also for just the general sound of Hedged In, I attribute that a lot more to podcasts like the Penumbra Podcast or Wolf 359. Their setups as audio dramas really changed how I looked at the sound design of a podcast, of how does this sound in earbuds? How does this sound in my car? And how you can manipulate those files and those things to really build and make a world that feels real, that feels solid. Because there's a huge difference in, so our motley is walking down the path and it's just them talking, versus if I add those levels of steps in the grass and the background sort of quiet chirping of crickets, that adds a level of intimacy that is really important to me. That those small touches add a lot to what I think makes the podcast good. How did you come up with all of the amazing music? I'm really glad you think it's amazing. I argue with GarageBand a lot. I do most, if not all, of the music, aside from a few pieces, on the GarageBand app on my iPhone. I have bits and pieces of musical knowledge due to just years of choir and bell choir and learning instruments, but never really sticking to practicing them. So I apply that knowledge as well. One of the ways that I really practice sort of figuring out how music works is I will attempt to rebuild other people's works in GarageBand. Like, obviously just like for personal use, but really figuring out, oh, this is how they're building these things. How can I apply that to my own work? I'm also, again, really inspired by Griffin from Taz and Carlos Luna from the Dungeon Rats and Rivals of Waterdeep and Carlos Luna, Carlos Luna, Carlos Luna. Carlos is amazing. He's very talented. Have you considered or scheduled having guests to play temporary characters? This was a Twitter question, and the short version is yes. The longer version is it's tricky. So having other players on is hard. What I can handle is about three players at once. It sets up a good balance. Having more players at the table divides my attention too much, and it's a personal limitation, not a desire limitation. There's also the sort of audio backlog in when we record versus when episodes come out. We as of time of this recording, we are setting up to do recordings for episode 20. We have recorded episode 19, but episode 13 still hasn't come out. So with theoretically two episodes coming out every month, we're about a 3 month log beforehand. So it makes it tricky, because if people were going to play temporary characters while playing with the cast, it would have to be a very interesting situation, because I'm not sure what I'd be able to write for that. I have, but this is where the yes comes in. I have had consideration of doing sort of one-shot episodes of sort of more background-y kind of things, of like, of seeing different pieces of the world that of Hedged In that has been created to sort of give it a larger universe feel. But all of those would be, strictly speaking, one-shots. I don't want to dilute the narrative that I'm building with Vita and Dan and Kat, because their story is what I need to make sure I get done first. In the same token, there's a large part of me that goes, well, I would really love to have more players of color. I would love to have more queer creators on. So future projects, maybe? Again, short version, yes. Long version, it's complicated. What is the one thing you want to improve the most? Voices. I feel like compared to other podcasts, I lack a consistent stable of voices. This has to do with the fact that I'm not really an actor. All of my background comes from the tech portion. I used to do video editing. I edit the podcast, obviously. So voices are a place that I am weaker in as compared to other podcasts. And truth be told, it's something I want to work on, but it is not the highest priority in my life at this precise second. So I'm working on it in bits and pieces, but it is the one thing I would want to improve on the most, is giving each of the NPCs, or at least giving the important NPCs, a better voice. If you were to start the show today, what's the one piece of advice you'd give yourself? This one's easy. I would have gotten Catherine a mic sooner than this. We do have her on a new microphone set up by episode 17. This has less to do with how people are perceiving how the episode sounds and more of my own time spent correcting for things, just for my own help for speed of workflow. So that's the hard truth of that. But I love you, Catherine. You're a good bean. How often have the players failed a role that you really wanted them to succeed at? Several times. I think there are times where I believe I've kept in the, oh no, I really needed you to succeed on that and the dice failed me. I've taken a couple of different approaches to roles and success. One of the storytellers that I work a lot with has told me, never make a player roll for something that you want them to do. Like, you want them to succeed. And I feel like that's honestly, that's pretty good advice to use, in that especially if you build a specialist on a character sheet, having that the, hey, I'm pretty good at this thing, can I do it? Rather than being like, roll for it, having them go, okay, describe to me what this looks like. And for me, that makes a better story, that makes for better audio, and it gets the player involvement more than just, okay, roll and I fail. So that's one way of just like, don't let them fail. Let them succeed. They're not the enemy. The other way is, okay, they've rolled and they failed. How do we approach this? Especially if this is something that I want them to do. I usually go with, okay, it happens, but there's a consequence. And I think this is a direct influence from, again, podcasts like Chaotic Goodness and Heart Points Pod, and where I'm really getting to learn some of the pieces of the Powered by the Apocalypse system and failing up of, it's more enjoyable for the players, in my opinion, I could be wrong, to feel like they have success, but then there's like this either comedic failure or this dramatic turn for their actions. So they still feel like they are in control of themselves. And I think that's important, because I feel like when you as a player don't feel like you are in control of your own character, you are less likely to take risks. And I don't think that's a fun way to game. I never want to punish players for taking a risk. And so if I already have this sort of idea in place of failure, a failed role isn't the end of the world, it could be more interesting than you think, I think that's a healthy way to have that put together. Who is your favorite NPC? I love playing Christoph the most. He is my trash boy and I love him. Despite the fact that I don't think anybody else does. Anox has some of my favorite aesthetics as a character. Beau is the person I want to be when I grow up, and Persimmon is me in real life. There's also some contention that Vixen is my most favorite character, and I would say she is one of... they're all my favorite characters. They're all my children. With Vixen, I would argue that she's also Dan's favorite character, Dan's favorite NPC. And so when you run game versus when you play game, I am dependent on the player's reactions to create plot further. So if they find something that they like, I can use that as a way to further story. So that sounds pretty manipulative, actually. But it's one of those things of my favorite character doesn't matter in that regard. Hey VJ, who's JW? JW is a story told to those who seek knowledge, who yearn for strength, and dream of more. JW is less of a person and more of an idea, an urban legend of a motley, or maybe someone more personal. Maybe it's just a title. Who is JW? Well, isn't that the question of the story now, isn't it? How long until Vixen and Kit get revenge on Nox? This is a good one, because the answer is not soon enough. Vixen's story and Nox's story and Kit's story are far, far from over. This pool goes deep. This pool goes real deep. And at the bottom, there are sparkles and stars and darkness. For the Hope Springs Eternal Motley, what are your favorite mortal realm fruits to eat? Beau, I didn't eat much fruit. It's pretty high in sugar, but bananas post-workout is a pretty good snack, I think. Haley, strawberries. I'm fond of the tart ones. Kristoff, we see the camera pan over Kristoff's shoulder as his eyes dart over to his partner, Dr. Rossi. Well, it's... I'd say apples, but I'm kind of partial to doctors being around, if you catch my drift. Aunt, Kiwi. For the Lost Toys, favorite cocktails? Sarah. Bee's knees, JJ.
Gin and tonic.
Taylor, I do not partake. Velvet, all of the Lost Toys sit forward in their seats and look at Velvet. Tequila, straight. What court would you join if you had the choice? I've always really attached myself to Spring and Dawn, both being Desire and Hope. They are my favorite courts. Incidentally, some of my favorite characters are Spring and Dawn courtiers. Although I've really grown to really enjoy the other courts as well, but Spring and Dawn, Spring and Dawn. And finally, what's the one thing you've done today or are planning to do to treat yourself? And that's a really sweet question. I am going to edit this Q&A, and then I'm going to go to karaoke with friends tonight, which is going to make Jeff, who asked the question, real happy because he really likes karaoke. Thank you for listening in to Hedged In, a Changeling Story. Current Tornado resident Dan can be found on Twitter at Unreal Giraffe. Our local cryptid cat does not have social media. We apologize. The wonderfully neat Vita is on Twitter at Green Bean Spirit. VJ can be found most places, including Twitter, as UnWFairy. You can find the show Twitter and Tumblr at HedgedInACS. You can find character sheets, future releases, and more on our website, HedgedInACS.com. A very special thanks to our Dragon Scale patrons, Wolfgang Anderson and That Epic Penguin, for your contributions every month. All of our social media, website, Discord, and Patreon information can be found in the show notes. If you have a moment, please rate and review on your podcast app of choice. Every piece of glamour helps. Thanks, and remember, stay weird.